today I'm going to get a lot more personal with you. I did sometimes feel on some dates and when getting to know people that these very long checklists could end up actually getting in the way of connecting, and you end up just feeling a bit like you're kind of not being treated as a real person but as a checklist. This could be controversial, and this is maybe just my own personal experience. I think the extent to which you have a Shadchan's involvement, it would be maybe wiser for it to be a bit more age dependent. So anyone that tells you looks don't matter, point them to the Gemara here and the Talmud here. You may well have things that you feel are important to you, and others will be like, that's ridiculous. But if it genuinely just bothers you and that's just the way it is, then you're all grown up now and that is the way it is. The level of pressure that people are put under, especially girls, can be pretty inhumane. And so asking questions like, why haven't you found someone yet? You know, what's going on? It's so insensitive, but it's also completely ignoring the fact that the way the world works and the way Torah teaches us the world works is that in life, you put your effort in, and then God ultimately decides the outcome. When people ask me, you know, why haven't you found someone yet? I would say, ask my maker. Today, I want to do a video that's very different to the other videos that I put out on JTV. And I'm going to get a lot more personal with you. It's a video, it's a topic that I've wanted to discuss for a long time. But to be honest, I felt it probably wouldn't be a good idea to do it until I was married. And I am so thrilled to say that I am now married and have been so for 6 months, and I feel so extremely blessed to have found my other half. But I did feel during my dating period and experiences that it would be quite a good idea at some point to do a video about my dating experiences and some of the lessons learned, particularly, and this really is a video targeted for this group of people, I would say particularly for those who are navigating the religious or frum Jewish dating scene, because there are a lot of specific dynamics and issues that come up there. I hope also this video can be universal and can be something that everyone can relate to, but there will be some specific things that I want to talk about, because for me, it's been an interesting experience, shall we say, doing the religious dating track. Because I didn't grow up, you know, in that world directly. I grew up in a traditional Jewish household, but didn't expect to be doing the religious dating approach, or what's called the, you know, shidduchim, matchmaking kind of approach. And in particular, I'm thinking about people who didn't grow up in this world and are now trying to navigate the religious Jewish dating scene. And I really hope this video will shed some light for you. And I also want to make it clear that I don't claim to have all the answers, or claim to that my journey or perspective is necessarily right for all people's lives and approaches. Certainly not. And it may well be that what I'm saying just isn't applicable for plenty of people. But the reason I'm doing it is because I kind of feel like I could have benefited from a video like this when I was going through this process. So if there's someone out there, even if I can just help one person, then I think this video will have achieved its aim. The reason why I didn't do this until I got married is because I thought I didn't want girls that I was dating to feel like I was kind of, you know, putting them under the microscope, maybe jotting down lessons that I was going to take from it and put it into a future video. I didn't want them to think that I'm being like overly analytical or anything on our dates. Essentially, it was for the sake of the other and for my own dating opportunities that I decided to wait until I got married to put out this video. The first thing I'd like to say is that I think the religious dating scene and approach makes far more sense than secular dating, the secular world, which can basically rush forward in terms of intimacy, where you're basically in bed by the first or second or third date. But then they can also draw out the process of dating. And then you end up having situations where people have dated for years and then they decide, nah, it's not right for us, and they end it. And the heartbreak and torment that people go through because they haven't, A, decided to maybe withhold from some level of intimacy until their head was clear about whether the person was right, let alone whether you're going to wait before or after marriage, but at least having that clarity. And number two, the length at which you invest time in a person, even if you think they're not right for marriage, you cannot help become attached to them over time. The torment that people put themselves through, the heartbreak, the heartache. It's amazing that people are able to keep getting back up on their feet if they keep going through all these long-term dating and then breaking up. So I think this system is pretty cruel and inhumane that we have in the secular world. So I want to make it clear that I think is the religious form of dating is a much saner system. And it's great in it, and it has great upsides and great successes. And so this video is not really a rant about religious dating at all. It's just about helping people navigate certain dynamics and situations that come up. It's about sharing my experience, hopefully to help other people feel seen. Now, just to give you a layout for what I want to talk about today, I want to start off with talking about a purpose and mindset that I think is helpful to have during dating. And this, by the way, is universal and can apply to anyone. Then practical questions around matchmaking and compromising, and can you talk about looks and image and raise that as an issue near the start? And then we're going to talk about dignity, maintaining one's dignity, the other person's dignity, and rejection. Then about questions of pace and flow, the speed at which is expected for you to date. Also the checklist mentality that I sometimes came across. Is it legitimate or is it a problem? Then privacy and maintaining boundaries, and also pressure that one may feel to make decisions. And other things that naturally come up we're all going to discuss today. So let's start off with purpose and mindset. So I think that, first of all, this is a question that everyone should consider, whether religious or not, which is what is the purpose of dating? The purpose of dating should be to find your spouse. Okay, obvious answer. Congratulations, I'll be well done. But there's a key thing that needs to be understood here. I think regardless of how you communicate to the person you're dating, to a matchmaker, just for your own sense of clarity, the purpose of dating, when you're trying to figure out, do I like this, do I not like that, about the whether it's about character, values, personality, how they look, all these things are not questions of, am I going to marry them for this? That shouldn't be the question. The question is just, is this an obstacle to me being able to love this person? Can I get over these particular hurdles or obstacles? So, and I think it's important to say this to oneself, because otherwise people can go into marriage with the wrong expectation. You know, I'm going into marriage so I can get this, that, or the other. No. When it comes to marriage, as my rabbi said to me under the marriage canopy, the chuppah, you're not getting married to get anything. You're getting married to give. So the issue of looks or background or values or personality are not there for things you want to be married to. They're not there as things that are your, you know, the reason for the marriage. They're there as potential hurdles that you don't want to get in the way. So for example, you might have something that you feel is bothersome. Let's say someone's accent. It's not that you're going to marry someone for their accent, but it could be that their accent really bothers you and it's just something you can't get over so that you can love them. And this is where it comes to the first lesson I've learned, which is that you may well have things that you feel are important to you and others will be like, that's ridiculous. For example, you just need someone to be have a certain accent or a certain skin tone or come from a certain area, whatever it is. And some people say, well, that's just ridiculous. Come on, you've got to grow up. Now, it may well be that you need to pause and reflect and think, maybe I can get over this. Maybe this doesn't bother me. But if it genuinely just bothers you and that's just the way it is, then you're all grown up now and that is the way it is. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's going to be a hurdle for you. And so you can't really do anything about it. It's how you're basically wired, whether it's nature or nurture. It is the way it is. And so you can't go into marriage where there are these big hurdles, these big blockages that are stopping you from being able to connect and love someone. Now the question of what to be looking for. I think there are basically some obvious categories that I think we, you know, most sane people can agree on are the obvious categories. Having shared values, because if you don't have shared values, you're not going to be able to build a home and build a life together. Someone wants to live in Brazil and you want to live in Spain, it's going to be, you know, you might love each other, but it's going to be a problem. If one of you wants to be very observant religiously and the other one doesn't, how's that going to work? How are you going to be able to raise kids? Every day is going to be a stress, and you need to be heading in the right direction. You both want to be able to step into each other's lives and live it together. So I think shared values, obviously critical. Then secondly, you need to feel physically attracted. And that's just an obvious point. And I want to get onto the issue of attraction later, because there's actually a lot more to say on this matter. And then there's, other than those two, I think feeling like you respect the other and feel like you enjoy their company, your personalities don't clash and don't create constant tension. I would say actually essentially all of this can be most summarized as something that transcends logic, and that's just like a gut feeling. The gut will tell you this clearly aligns. Obviously all these things that I'm referencing, having the right values, having the physical attraction, all these things, they're going to need to line up. But ultimately, you kind of, my sense is, you kind of just will know. There'll be a feeling where you'll know that this clearly aligns. And that's something that I think is really a bit of a divine blessing. Let's now touch on some of the practical elements here. One of the things that comes up in religious dating is there's this thing called a shadchan, which people who are watching this and are familiar with the firm dating scene know exactly what I'm talking about, a matchmaker. And the purpose of the matchmaker, the shadchan, is to get to know guys and girls, hear about what it is that they're looking for, and then to make suggestions. And that's terrific, and that is amazing. And I think that is one of the most beautiful roles that a people can have in connecting two people together and helping them find their other half. Now, however, a shadchan, a matchmaker, often is not just involved in the setting up, but actually acts as an intermediary and a go-between when the dating happens. Now, this can be a very, very useful thing. I know many people watching this who aren't familiar with that will think this sounds so alien, it sounds so bizarre. And it can be a helpful thing, but there are caveats to this. First of all, having someone to speak to in a shadchan that really gets you and just has your best interests at heart and just wants to listen to you and listen to what you'd like and help you navigate your dating process, and also especially if they can talk to both parties, then they can help you talk things through, get things from both people's perspectives. It saves awkward conversations at the start where you're kind of unsure how things go and don't go. And I think in that sense, it can be really useful. However, I think there's also, and this could be controversial, and this is maybe just my own personal experience, but I think that the extent to which you have a shadchan's involvement, it would be maybe wiser for it to be a bit more age dependent. Now, I don't know if that's controversial. I don't know if that is, you know, just not a fair thing to say or not appropriate thing to say. But to be honest, I kind of found sometimes that you could have a bit of a invasion of privacy or boundaries, and that didn't really seem necessary to me. Now, the counter argument to that is, well, you need to protect people's feelings, and shadchans can be a great way of, you know, guys in particular might say things to a girl about why things aren't necessarily right or wrong, and they will end up maybe saying things that are clumsy and hurting the other person. So it's very good at the start, the argument goes, to have someone in, you know, as a go-between that can protect their feelings. Now, I think one of the caveats should be with this, that it makes sense for this to be more, number one, age-dependent. Because I think people that date very young, they're much more likely to be immature and insensitive in the way they engage with the other person, especially near the start, and they probably could say insensitive and hurtful things. But I think if you're dealing with certainly two people who are significantly older, to have an additional person there sometimes just feels unnecessary at best and potentially a little bit invasive at worst. So I think age dependent is also important. I think also the second question is how long the go-between is being there for. Because yeah, maybe it might make sense the first couple of dates, but once you've basically gone past the first couple of dates, you're both in a position where you're clearly liking each other, and you know that's clearly the way things are going. Having said that, it's very, very may well be the case that there are people who just don't know how to say things sensitively or carefully. And so maybe you would say that Shadchan should be there all the way as the go-between until the point of marriage. I personally just found it just a bit intrusive. And maybe that's me as a Western person that was not raised in this world. But it just felt potentially a bit evasive. And the other thing I would say is this can also be quite Shadchan dependent. So, you know, I have no doubt that, and my experience has been that a lot of Shadchans out there, a lot of matchmakers, they all they do is just set up, ask how they can be of use, and that's it. But you may sometimes find ones that are maybe more involved than one may be comfortable with, certainly once you reach a certain level. And there I would simply say that just some level of discernment and common sense may be smart and advisable. The concern people also have is that they say, well, if you have a Shadchan, if you don't have a Shadchan, then you might end up just getting too familiar or too... Again, this is where I think sometimes common sense can go out the window. Ultimately, you're trying to build towards marriage. You're trying to build towards something, and there has to come a point at which there's going to be some level of risk in how you communicate and how things move, and you need to be able to just communicate and build a relationship. Now, one of the big concerns is that there can be hurt without a Shadchan. And so that I completely appreciate. And again, I'm just telling you what my experience was. It could be, you know, I had a rabbi once said to me that becoming a Baal Teshuva, someone that becomes a lot more observant, is it takes several generations. And so there are going to be some things where things simply just don't fit into place. And so maybe that's what's going on here in my case. But for me, I kind of felt certainly once I was getting into my later 20s, that if one can be sensitive and have common sense, one should be able to say, you know, I think I can take things from this point. I'm open to a conversation on this. Also, as I say, I don't believe there's necessarily a one size fits all here. And maybe there'll also be people who are still immature. At the end of the day, though, you are getting married at some point. And so I think boys and girls being taught some level of etiquette and sensitivity would be a good thing regardless, right? I've just been looking back on this video as I was editing it, and something I wanted to stress as well is that I do think Shadchans can be useful, and they can be just as a friend can be useful, a family member or family friends can be super useful in knowing you, connecting you with other people. That's wonderful as well. The particular issue I'm addressing is around their involvement after the initial setup, involvement in kind of being a go-between between the two parties. That's something separate, and that's something that I think more consideration and selectiveness around is reasonable. And this also comes to, you know, the particular reason they say Shadchans are necessary is for explaining when things don't go right and there is a rejection. that they can explain it well. Now, if you are the one that is doing the rejection, I do not believe that one necessarily has to be honest. Maybe it's you, one can be more honest to a shadchan that you're speaking to. But if you're the one that's navigating it yourself and you just didn't think the person's right, let's say something bothered you, you weren't physically attracted to them, you didn't like a certain aspect of their personality that bothered you, etc., etc., whatever it is, there is a principle in the Torah that you can be dishonest or leave out certain things in order to protect people's feelings for the sake of kindness. God himself does this with Abraham and Sarah, where he slightly he basically gives a different interpretation of what Sarah said about Abraham's age to Abraham to protect his feelings, to protect Shalom Bayis, peace in the home. And so I think given that someone is going to be right for every person, why do you need to tell them, I didn't like your accent, I didn't like your character, I didn't like you the way you looked, I didn't like this? I don't really see the benefit in saying that. And it can be insensitive. And so for those who do wish to go, just level with a person, I think it's reasonable, if nothing can be gained, if there's nothing that can be learned for them, for the future, that isn't like objectively a problem, then I think it's best just to, give a vague answer that maybe isn't dishonest, but just isn't specific. You can just say, I didn't feel like our energies aligned, or I didn't feel that it's just a feeling. I just can't, it just doesn't feel right. I was on the receiving end of that. And I think that's, to be honest, really the best way. I'm so excited to share with you something that I've been working on for a while. We've just taken JTV content to the next level. Introducing JTV Plus, a new platform streaming exclusive content created and handpicked by me. Get ready for jaw-dropping documentaries, exclusive interviews, insider access, and so much more. JTV Plus brings you captivating stories that will shock and inspire you, stories that honestly, I'm discovering for the first time too. From Israel to Jewish history to Judaism, it's all there. In exclusive interviews, you'll hear guests open up about things they've never shared publicly before. Plus, I'll take you behind the scenes where I get a lot more personal with you. By joining JTV Plus, you're not just joining an exclusive community, you're partnering with me to help JTV reach new heights. Just search j-tv.plus and join our exclusive community today. There's a link in the video description. I'll see you there. Then there's also the issue of talking to people during the dating process. As I said, it can be useful to have a shadchan, but I think some people can find it invasive after it gets to a certain point, or maybe just they'd rather be able to talk to someone either that they know or trust, or maybe just they're not looking, they don't want to have any concern or thought in their mind that maybe this might get back to the other person, and they just want to talk out what's going through in their own mind. I'd say two things on this. First of all, I don't think it's a good idea, if you're able to talk about where your head's at in the early stages. If you're able to hold off at all and you can just process it yourself, I think it's better. My experience was, it was actually quite a bit better to just sit with it yourself. Because sometimes you talk about things too much, first impressions too much, and it concretizes things that may well not end up actually being the reality. Having said that, once you get to a certain point where questions start to emerge and you're really unsure, having a friend that's just an equal to you, that you just have the same values with and you can just talk things out, and also a mentor, whether it's a rabbi or whoever it is, when you're ready, it can be really, really useful. Someone that can step outside and look at things objectively. Because, it can be a vulnerable time. We can end up convincing ourselves of things that aren't true. because we're just trying to fit into so much of what, let's say, the other person we're dating wants or says. So it's, that is where it can be useful. But I feel more in the early stages, as things are very, very fluid and you're trying to build a picture of someone, give it a bit of time to think. Otherwise, you know, you start concretizing things that aren't necessarily the case. So recognize that it's very fluid time at the start. And, you know, you can be, you will be in for some level of surprises and developments in your perspective of the other person. Compromise. People say every relationship has to have compromise. Here's a surprising thought from me. Never, ever compromise. What? What do you mean? Isn't our relationships all about compromise? If you can do something for someone else, and it's maybe not something you would typically do, but you are prepared to do it for them, then do it. But that's not compromise. That's effort you're willing to put in because you want to make a relationship work. But if it's going to be something that you are going to resent long term, let's say someone else just wants to live somewhere else and you don't want to, then you can't compromise on that because you're just going to end up being unhappy and you'll resent the other person. And this is why I, by the way, was very, very clear that when I dated people from outside of where I live, I would make sure they'd be prepared to live here first, because this is where, for now, I want my life to be, and I need it to be here for a variety of reasons. And so there's no point in starting something if that's not, they're not prepared to do that. And so I would clarify that before the very first date. What's the point in getting involved emotionally and all of that if you're not going to be able to have a functional marriage? Then there's the issue of asking for a picture and, you know, wanting to know how they look, and even maybe bringing that up as a reason for why maybe you don't think that it's going to work. Certainly, by the way, this shouldn't be something that one says to the other person that they're dating. Don't ever say that. Simple. But this notion of, well, you know, you shouldn't ask for a picture, you shouldn't want to know how they look, that's, or their looks, you can't make that the reason, you know, the attraction can grow. Okay, here's, it's for those who aren't in the religious dating system, they're going to be watching this, you're going to be watching this scratching your heads being like, Ollie, are you insane? Obviously, physical attraction is a critical component of a healthy relationship. Why shouldn't I be able to know what they look like before a date and all of that? Just looking back on this, I had to add in one thing I wanted to say before we continue with the issue of physical attraction. Specifically around the issue of pictures, I think it's really important to note that pictures are one-dimensional and your experience of a person can be very different, even from a physical standpoint, when you're seeing them in person. So it's really important to appreciate that they are limited. It's also, attraction in and of itself is something that often can be more than just one-dimensional, you know, physical looks. A lot of the attraction, physical attraction I'm talking about, is something that can, number one, develop with time, and number two, can be about, you know, the gleam in their eyes, the little quirks they have, that kind of thing. So it's important that we understand that we've been a bit brainwashed by the Hollywood Western shallow culture. That being said, I also really don't want to dismiss physical attraction as well. And I think that sometimes a picture, if someone just really isn't your type, then it may well be that you're just wasting each other's time. And so it's kind of a bit of a balance to strike, specifically the issue of pictures, before you've even seen them on a first date. And so that's important. It's also important that people on either side, you have to be careful that people don't feel, you know, when handing over pictures or whatever, that they're treated as a piece of meat. So maybe the way you do it should be, that is something that certainly that it's good for it to be more indirect and subtle. And certainly if something just doesn't strike you as right for you, you don't need to feed that. That doesn't need to go back to the person directly. And that is obviously something where a middleman or a shadchan can be very helpful. But then there's the question of, once you're actually on the date and you have a date or two and you just don't find them physically attractive, there, absolutely, if you're not finding things are growing at all, that is absolutely legitimate. And I'm going to talk a bit more about this now. Now, look, I do appreciate that a picture is not always an accurate representation of someone. And I also appreciate that attraction can grow, absolutely. But I want to bring your attention to the Talmud, which talks about how someone needs to be able to know what their partner looks like before they get married. Now, why would that be the case? It says in Kiddushin 41a, it is taught, a man is forbidden to betroth a woman until he has seen her, lest he see something unseemly in her and she become repulsive to him. And as God said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So listen to the words here. It's not saying a man should see his wife so that he ensure that he is attracted to her. It says he should see his wife to make sure there isn't anything he is unattracted by. Do you hear the difference? This goes back to what we were saying earlier. You don't get married to someone and the dating process is not about trying to see, oh, am I so attracted to them that I just want to marry them because of how they look? No. The issue is, are there going to be certain things that are hurdles that stop you from being able to love them? So listen to the language of the Talmud. Not lest he not be super attracted to her, it's lest he be unattractive to her. And so the issue is, when wanting to feel some level of attraction after a date or two, the issue is not that you have to be super attracted to them. And you can explain this after a first date or two. You don't. No one's saying you have to find them super, super attractive, and especially at the start, because as we know, attraction grows. But the issue is, you shouldn't be unattracted to them. And that's all that the baseline should be, that you shouldn't find them unattractive. And I think that the Talmud is so sensitive and wise in using this language and approach. And I think that you should be able to express that. And so anyone that tells you looks don't matter, point them to the Gemara here and the Talmud here. Again, it's not about them being drop-dead gorgeous in every single case. It's about, is there a baseline of attraction or potential for attraction? Or rather, is there anything that is going to make you feel particularly unattracted? So now I want to talk about the issue of how fast you go in the dating process, because there'll be some people who say X amount of time is too much, X amount of time is too little, and a lot of it can be quite subjective. I do think it's very useful to have, at least in your mind, a sense of what is a sensible amount of time that I can be able to get to know someone and make a decision. You know, for some people, they might say it's 3 months. For some people, it might be a bit more. Whatever it is, even if it's 6, 9 months, there needs to come a point at which you say, okay, this is enough time for me to know whether someone's right for me or not. The reason is because, number one, you can end up just getting into a thing where just things go on and you never actually make a decision. And the danger then is you end up with this potential for heartbreak, for having basically been in a long-term mini marriage, almost mini, relationship. So that's really important. But there can be a lot of pressure from people as well to make decisions much faster than is reasonable, and maybe even, if not reasonable for most people, reasonable for you. And so I think it's really important, just as one shouldn't allow themselves to just be unending in the way they date, they also should realize that the pace at which they do things, I think it's really helpful to communicate with your partner about the person you're dating, especially early on, about what kind of expectations you have or needs are that you have on that front, so you're both on the same page. But letting other people dictate to you the speed at which you do things or come to a decision for what is essentially one of, if not the most important decision in your life, it strikes me as quite inappropriate. Now, the other thing that I came across, especially with girls that grew up in religious homes, I found quite common was a deep sense of pressure that they felt to find someone and to make decisions quickly. And I want to talk a bit more about this pressure issue later on. But specifically with regard to the timing of dating and how long one takes and that kind of stuff, one thing that someone that I went on a few dates with actually said to me that I found a very good way of putting it was, imagine you have people, builders, building a building, a home, and they have to start with the foundations, which naturally means there's no cover, they're exposed to the elements. Would you choose to build the foundations in sunny weather or rainy weather? Obviously, you'd choose sunny weather. And so the message was, build in sunny weather. Build foundations in sunny weather. And what does sunny weather mean? Well, I'll tell you what rainy weather would be. Rainy weather is constantly checking in the whole time and saying, you know, how are you feeling to your other partner? Where are we heading? How, you know, do you think this is going to be right? Is this the way, you know, where's your head at? Of course, it's good to check in from time to time. But when it becomes obsessive to the point where you don't feel you can actually relax and get to know the other person, that's where it becomes a problem. As I think it was a psychologist shared with me once, you have to feel safe to play. To be able to get to know someone, to really ease into a relationship, to ease into how you feel, to open up, you've got to kind of put to the back of your mind the issue of where's this heading, where are we at, what's this going to be, what's going to be, and the pressure. And that's why it's so unhealthy to have that. You've got to feel a certain sense of feeling safe so that you can come close to each other. And this leads me nicely to the whole issue of having a checklist in your head. There's a bit of a inherent contradiction that I think I saw Dovi Neuberger pointing out in dating, which is that on the one hand, you're meant to be like, you need to, in the early stages, be somewhat judgmental, not in terms of the person's soul or identity, but in terms of whether they are a right match for you, in terms of that criteria we spoke about before. But on the other hand, in order to get close to someone, in order to connect with them, one needs to drop the checklist a little bit, drop their judgment a bit, and just be a bit more spontaneous in connecting to someone else. And people can feel, actually, if you're chronically looking at them with a checklist. And I think the approach has to be here. You can't ignore one or the other. From time to time, one needs to check in and check into that, you know, their criteria of what they need. But for it to dominate the whole time, just as the question of where are we heading, you know, constantly asking where are we at, what's going to be in the relationship, doing that the whole time can turn it into rainy weather. I think that's the case here. From time to time, one can check in on where are things heading. From time to time, one can check in on their list of criteria. But one thing I also did note and did experience myself with people, girls that grew up in religious homes, is that as important as it is to have clear criteria, it is, I think, sometimes worth reflecting on whether one's checklist is overly rigid. And it can end up having like very, very, very specific things that sometimes mean that you're just really, really limiting yourself to getting to know people who may well be completely compatible with you, who may well have completely the same values as you, but because you're so stuck on certain specific things needing to be on that checklist, that actually may well be somewhat trivial, it can end up compromising things. And I did sometimes feel on some dates and when getting to know people that these very long checklist could end up actually getting in the way of connecting, and you end up just feeling a bit like you're kind of not being treated as a real person but as a checklist. And so I think there needs to be a bit of a balance there, because actually sometimes people who are very compatible with each other can end up things can end up being not working out because of the obsession with the checklist. So I think that's important. I don't really want to get into specifics of some of the trivial things that I felt were on some people's checklists, but I think you kind of know what I mean when I say this. Now, I want to be clear. I said earlier that you can have things that just are certain things that bother you or certain things you need, and you're all grown up now, so you have to work with that. That is fair enough. And I'm not challenging that. What I'm talking about here is a separate point of one can sometimes have drilled into their own heads. It's not coming from them, but it's drilled into them of all the things they need to have on their checklist. And I'm saying there, maybe sometimes it might be worth reflecting. Is it really so essential that my husband grew up in, let's say, a religious home, maybe? You know, Rabbi Akiva, Abraham, they were Baal Teshuvahs, quote unquote. They, you know, didn't grow up religious, observant. And yet they're some of the greatest figures of all time in Judaism. And listen, maybe for some people, they just want to have someone that their whole family is also observant. But I wonder whether maybe sometimes that checklist can be very narrow-minded. And I wonder if it's always in the spirit of Judaism and Torah. The next thing I want to talk about is sharing your deepest parts, deepest secrets, your vulnerabilities. Look, obviously, it is essential that one feels utterly embraced and accepted in their marriage partner. But I would suggest that sharing, you know, the deepest parts of yourselves and vulnerabilities and maybe even secrets, I think this is something that one should gradually open up about as the relationship develops. Obviously, if there's something that they have a right to know about that could dramatically impact your lives together, or, you know, they just have a right to know about, fine. But things that are just your vulnerable, sensitive parts, don't mention them on the first date. You know, you have no idea which direction this will head in. It's something you can open up with over time as you get closer. The comparison that I'd give is, you know, in Jewish outreach, do they talk about the fact that the Torah says that the punishment for not keeping Shabbat is the death penalty, in theory, if one does it in public with two witnesses, okay, all that. But ultimately, that is the case. No, you don't mention that because people are getting their very first impressions of Judaism and Torah, and you need a bit of context, a bit of foundations before going into some of the more delicate parts. So that's the kind of the way that I think about it. The next area that I want to touch on is pressure that people will no doubt feel. And I this was a bit of a surprise to me because I didn't really see this so much or as much in the non-religious dating scene before I, you know, became more observant. There is this deep sense of needing to get married and get married fast, which in many ways is a wonderful part of religious Jewish life, that we are so family-centric, so marriage-centric, and also want to channel all these energies that one has once they reach adolescence into positive, wholesome mitzvot, right? So that's all great. But the level of pressure that people are put under, especially girls, I think at times can be pretty inhumane. People are already putting themselves under a lot of pressure most of the time to want to be able to find the right person. And, you know, you might not appreciate this if you didn't grow up in this community or aren't familiar with this community, but if you're not married by early 20s, people start to look at you as like, this is really serious, you know, you need to find someone. And I'm not denying or saying that one shouldn't want to have as a top priority finding a partner, but I think the anxiety rates that are created from people putting pressure on everyone more than they already put on themselves, an environment of sometimes hysteria if someone hasn't yet found their person, I find it to be pretty inhumane. And I'd like to unpack this a bit and explain why. You know, something I was asked, and I know other people asked, and they will get asked by family, whatever, is, you know, why haven't you found someone yet? Or, you know, what's going on? Maybe being too picky, is that what's going on here? And I'm not denying there are people out there who may well be too picky and have been presented incredible people. But I would suggest that in a lot of cases, it's ultimately the fact that we are not in control of everything that happens in our lives. And it's not necessarily that one is too picky. It can just be because one hasn't yet found their right partner. And there's this weird insensitivity that goes on that ignores the fact that ultimately it is Hashem who's in control. Of course we have to put our effort in. But I can assure you that most people in the firm religious dating system are putting the effort in. They are doing everything they should be doing reasonably in order to find their other half. And so asking questions like, why haven't you found someone yet? You know, what's going on? It's so insensitive, but it's also completely ignoring the fact that the way the world works and the way Torah teaches us the world works is that in life, you put your effort in and then God ultimately decides the outcome and God decides the timing of things. And it's like there's this total disconnect here. You can see I'm getting very passionate about this. There's this total disconnect between understanding that and the way we talk about it. And this applies not just to dating and marriage, it applies to one's wealth, health, all these things. These things aren't in our control. We have to put in the effort. God asks us to put in the effort. But the timings that God has for each of us in our lives, everyone has a different deck of cards they're dealt with in life. And our timings are all different. And so when people ask me, you know, why haven't you found someone yet? I would say, ask my maker. I mean, seriously, like that should become, I think, a norm in conversations. Again, it's not to say that we shouldn't always reflect on the effort we're putting in. And maybe I'm being naive and saying that most people put in the right amount of effort. Maybe I'm just projecting my own experiences. But I dated girls who would also face these questions. And they, goodness me, were not just putting in effort, but they were driving themselves into points of serious anxiety over finding someone. And it's just such a unfair comment because of that to say, oh, you know, why aren't you doing more? There's a whole separate question around maybe people are self-sabotaging their relationships and all these things. That is something that can be looked into, but often one finds that people are just struggling, they can't find someone, and then eventually everyone's surprised they finally found someone. So it wasn't necessarily they were sabotaging things, it was just that they hadn't yet found their person that they were compatible with. And I do believe that every lid has a pot, as incompatible as one pot or one lid may seem in terms of being in a relationship. I really do believe that is the way God made the world. Now, one of the things that can also happen with pressure is you can end up feeling a bit burned out, you know, especially when you're feeling a lot of pressure, anxiety, and you're dating so often and things just aren't going anywhere. You can end up feeling very burned out. So one approach I found that was helpful in this regard is, in order to try and take a bit of that pressure off, first of all, when you go on a date, you should see it as you're just meeting a stranger. You know, I remember a friend once said to me before I had a first date, I happened to mention I had a date, even though, as I was saying earlier, I want to try to be pretty discreet about this. By the way, the reason to be discreet is because I don't think, especially in the early stages, or maybe even throughout the dating process, you don't need other people to think that maybe you're now taken. Because what if it doesn't work out? And also people can end up maybe in being invasive, asking you questions, how's it going, what's going on, and you just need that space in your head just to process it. So I think it's very wise to be pretty discreet about your dating, especially in the early stages. But a friend said to me on the first date, they said, Ollie, you know, get in the zone, get ready, you know, make sure you're going to put in your best impression and all that. Now, of course, I want to be, you know, a mensch. I want to be, put my best foot forward on a date. But ultimately, you're not there to make a good impression. You're there to be yourself. And so you're ultimately just meeting a stranger and seeing if you two connect. And if not, not. And this is nothing more than just a stranger at this point on the first date. Once you start getting to a few dates in, then you can start to look at it. But I think that was quite a helpful way of managing that pressure. And also just looking at it as like, I'm here to get to know someone and I can learn from everyone. So I'm not going to have this big pressure in my head of, is this the right one? Is this not? I'm just meeting a stranger and hopefully I'll learn new things about another human being, in which I can't necessarily do day to day, because how often are we sitting down for a drink or a meal or whatever it is and really getting to know someone at a deeper level? Dating actually provides an opportunity to do that. So just think, at the very least, I'm just here to maybe learn a bit more about someone at a deeper level who's going to open up to me a bit more. So that is these are some of the big issues that I think really need raising in the whole dating religious world discussion. The one final thing that I want to touch on is being put into boxes. People often get asked, you know, what kind of observant Jew are you? You know, are you this, that, the other? Do you wear a black hat? Do you not? Are you modern? Are you, what's your hashkafa? All these things. My sense is that it's not that these issues don't have a place, because sometimes they can be practically important, especially if something's really, really important to you. Like, for example, what kind of school you send your kids to and all these things. But I also do believe that sometimes common sense needs to prevail. Sometimes these checklists don't need to be so rigid. And that's for each individual person to reflect on. Because these, if there are big practical issues that you just need to straighten out, fine. But at the same time, sometimes these labels can be just that, labels. We're all ultimately Jews. We all have Jewish souls. We're all, certainly people, hopefully in the religious dating world, are striving to be good, observant Jews. And sometimes the specific hashkafa one has, hey, we're all Jews. We're all essential components of God's plan. We all have divine souls and are all necessary components of the Jewish people. And to be honest, these labels can often be pretty shallow. Every single human being, every single Jew, is a whole universe. And so it's not to dismiss labels entirely, it's just to say maybe take these labels with a bit of a pinch of salt. Now, what I want to do in the next section is to get your questions. So if you had a question about anything that I've said or my views on anything related to this topic, please write in the comment section, and we're going to be doing a follow-up on JTV Plus. So if you don't yet know about JTV Plus, I'll show you a video explaining what it's all about. And once we've reached circulation of this video for a couple weeks, I'm going to be doing a follow-up video answering your questions on the JTV Plus website. So Here's the promo video to learn a bit more about this new Jewish JTV streaming platform that we've created. So please do consider becoming a member. And as I say, I will do a follow-up video reacting to your questions, and just put your question in the comment section and we'll go to it then. But have a watch of what JTV Plus is all about. I'm so excited to share with you something that I've been working on for a while. We've just taken JTV content to the next level. Introducing JTV Plus, a new platform streaming exclusive content created and handpicked by me. Get ready for jaw-dropping documentaries, exclusive interviews, insider access, and so much more. JTV Plus brings you captivating stories that will shock and inspire you. Stories that, honestly, I'm discovering for the first time too. From Israel to Jewish history to Judaism, it's all there. In exclusive interviews, you'll hear guests open up about things they've never shared publicly before. Plus, I'll take you behind the scenes where I get a lot more personal with you. By joining JTV Plus, you're not just joining an exclusive community, you're partnering with me to help JTV reach new heights. Just search j-tv.plus and join our exclusive community today. There's a link in the video description. I'll see you there. So JTV Plus is going to be hosting a range of really cool content, premium documentaries, exclusive interviews, all kind of stuff. And it's also a way to get involved and become part of a community where, as I say, I'll be answering your questions in live streams and also from this particular video. And it's a way to support JTV and help us continue to do what we do and hopefully reach even more people over the coming years. So thank you so much for watching. If you found this video helpful and useful, please do share it with others. And this was a pretty personal one for me, but I think it's pretty important to get some of these life lessons that hopefully will benefit some of you watching this. Thanks so much.